Chicago is.
The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is coming to Chicago for its one and only 2019 conference. You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Chicago is. It doesn't sound like it could possibly happen in America, where a parent, sometimes both parents, has the very custody of their children challenged legally because that child is under the misimpression that they were born in the wrong body, essentially, that their biological sex is not their real sex, that they are not the gender that their anatomy indicates and dictates. I mean, that in itself is bizarre enough, but that schools, judges, child services in various states would become involved in that situation and say, because you will not allow or support your child in transitioning to the opposite gender, you are not a fit parent. But it's actually happening. Joining us to talk about parental rights and transgender affirmation, Margot Cleveland, an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame and a senior contributor to The Federalist, author of a recent column there titled LGBT Activists Teaching Judges to Yank Kids from Parents Who Won't Transgender Them. Margot, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Tell us about South Dakota Bill 1205.
This was a bill that just was killed in the House of the South Dakota State Legislature last week. And it's a really simple bill. It is less than a page long, and I actually want to read it so that your listeners can see how straightforward it is. It says, a parent has the right to refuse consent to health care treatment of a minor child if the parent believes that the treatment would induce, confirm, or promote the child's belief that the child's sex or gender identity is different from the child's sex presented at birth. No public authority or official of the state may take any adverse action against a parent for exercising this right. That's the main thrust of it. There's another portion that defines health care and parent and adverse action, but it's simple, and it really is just restating a parent's natural right to make decisions about the upbringing of their child. And it's not talking about any type of health care. It's specifically saying health care that would induce, confirm, or promote the child's delusion that they are a sex other than their biological sex. And that this bill was killed in South Dakota is amazing. It's a deep red state. And this is not doing anything other than stating something that I think 99% of parents would agree to.
You say that the fate of this bill lays bare the transgender activists' plan. What is that plan?
It is that if a child wants to assert that they're transgender or that their sex is something different than their own, parents have no say, and that they will use the government to take the child from the parent and have someone else who will promote that belief within them. And you can see this with the lobbying that went on. Like I said, this statute is so clear, and yet what you have is a lobbyist organization, the Human Rights Act, which says it implies that the parent's objection to the child being transgender somehow obfuscates their identity and trumps their legitimate medical needs. They're making this an issue of medical neglect, which is absolutely ridiculous. Yes, a child with gender dysphoria should have treatment. They should have mental health treatment. If there is a physical issue, parents obviously should take care of that. But the bill was to protect parents so that they would not have to have their child's false sex confirmed by a doctor, which now the standard of care being promoted is using hormones to prevent puberty, so a hormone blocker, and then later cross-gender hormones. And they're saying that parents should have no right to say no to this. It's absolutely appalling.
You describe the plan coming in three waves. What's the first wave of this plan?
So the three waves is actually a point that a doctor that I interviewed, her name is Dr. Michelle Cretella, and she is the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. And she explained this to me, and she said, you know, the first wave, we've already seen, it started in 2016, where you have custody battles going on from a divorce. And that what was going on is you would have a child who is now saying that they're transgender, and the court was giving custody to the parent who would affirm that, as opposed to the parent who said, no, this is not appropriate medical treatment for him. So that was what was going on with the first treatment. And she had spoken with parents in this situation, and in all but one case, it was actually a 15-year-old girl, and they had never before the divorce had any sexual identity confusion. And yet, the judges were awarding the custody and the medical decisions to the parent who would confirm their false gender of being a boy.
What is the second wave of this
plan? So we're currently in the second wave, which is where we're seeing emergency room staff or doctors or therapists reporting parents to Child Protective Services if they're not affirming the child's false gender. And Dr. Cretella also provided an example where that happened. They had adopted a child who was from an abusive family and was suicidal. And the first time ever in the ER, he tells the doctor he's transgender. And that causes the Child Protective Services to get involved. And so that's the second wave, where now we're having people that the child is taken to an emergency room staff, a doctor, a therapist who is involving the state through the Child Protective Services.
And the third wave?
And the third wave is where we're going to be soon, according to Dr. Cretella, which is schools, where teachers would do the reporting to Child Protective Services. And you're familiar that there are certain mandatory reporters, so if a child shows up and they're battered and bruised, that they would call the state and say, look, we think the parent is being abusive. But now you have schools very much involved in gender identity, from some asking what is the pronoun, what is your name, what is your preferred sex. And the schools are going to be doing this. The teachers are going to be, if we have a child saying, well, my parents won't let me do this, you're going to have schools involving social workers and Child Protective Services.
What have we learned from Rhode Island documents that were recently obtained through the Freedom of Information Act?
So, as I noted in my article, I had come across the, I guess, bragging, I would say, of doctors who were talking about training Rhode Island Family Court judges. And I did a FOIA request and received what they had was a little over 100 pages of documents. They were all coming from the LGBT community. They were all very much of one perspective, which is if a child has gender dysphoria, they should be affirmed. They have the right to be treated as that gender that they identify with, and they have the right to this information, parental rights, it doesn't matter. And it had handouts that were, these are doctors that you could refer to. It had handouts of organizations and resources, completely one-sided, treating it as if the only appropriate medical care for these children is affirmation, which involves hormone suppressors, cross hormones, and then later you could have mastectomies and other types of surgery.
Tell us about last year's policy statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics.
So the American Academy of Pediatrics issued a policy statement that recommended the gender-affirming approach and recommended that youth have access to comprehensive gender-affirming and what they call developmentally appropriate health care, which would mean these puberty suppressors that you're hearing about, and also that they have to have their gender affirmed. So this is the main organization of pediatricians who is making the statement, making this recommendation, that this is the way that you should treat individuals who have gender dysphoria.
You mentioned earlier another pediatric association. Sure. Are there any voices in the pediatric community speaking out against this kind of move?
So the American College of Pediatricians is what I would say kind of the flip of this association, where they're not based on whatever happens to be the politically correct view. They are looking at what is the right view for child's health care, and they aren't swayed by the PC culture and the activists. And they have issued a statement that suggests that it is actually not appropriate and that they should immediately stop and prohibit the use of these puberty suppressors for children. And it talks about other types of care, usually with children who have a gender dysphoria. There's some other issue that's going on as well. Doesn't mean all of them, but some other issue. So there definitely are doctors that are speaking out. Dr. Michelle Curtella, as I mentioned, is very, very forceful. She has spoken many times to different organizations, and there are obviously other doctors that are involved with that association. You can go on their webpage and get information that there are local doctors.
What is a pattern? Kind of bring this all together for us, if you would, Margo. What's the pattern that emerges for you as you observe these situations?
So what I see as a pattern is a stealth indoctrination. I mentioned the Rhode Island FOIA, but that was only one of four states of which I was aware that this type of training has been going on. The Rhode Island one was with the family court, so it was much easier for me to hunt down the documents. But Delaware, Pennsylvania, and I'm blanking on what the third state was, but there were three states where different doctors involved in care of individuals with gender dysphoria at a conference said that we've done training with these child protective services organizations. And you know, if it's happening with at least four, it's happening much more widespread. So what I'm trying to convey here is this is going on. This is going on behind the scenes. And you might feel this doesn't affect you. There's nothing that is in your child has no issues of gender identity. But as we're seeing, this is a contagion, that it is basically being passed from one child to another, that you will see groups of children all of a sudden expressing the same sort of confusion about their identity. And if the state is being told that there's only one way to do it and you don't agree, you could very well be at risk.
What can ordinary parents do in the face of all this?
Right. So there's so many things that ordinary parents can do, but there are different levels of how much you want to, I guess, put your neck out there, because the transgender activist community is very, very harsh. They will come down on people very quickly. So you've got the simplest, which is keep your kids out of the public schools, but that's not always feasible for everyone. Obviously, having an open line of communications with your child. If parents feel that their child is mature enough and would be able to say no to things, that they convey it and you direct the school that this is not acceptable to either teach certain material to your child, have them, I guess, have opposite sex sharing bathrooms, locker rooms, but that school-aged child is so much at risk for peer pressure, so it makes it very difficult. Beyond that, you need to get involved. Talk to your legislator and tell them, we want this type of parental protection that South Dakota failed on. Find people who are supportive of family rights and push them to provide this kind of protection. And of course, if you know of another parent whose child is suffering, they are most likely getting information from their doctor that this is the only way to treat the child. Reach out to them and let them know there are other options. and obviously pray for them, because I can't imagine anything worse than having a child suffer so horribly and feel that this is the only thing you can do.
Finally, Margot, to your knowledge, is anyone asking the question, why are we seeing children expressing this dysphoria in such numbers, apart from how transgender activists try to frame the agenda here and set policy? Is anyone asking that basic question, why now, why this?
Right, and they are. There's been, as I mentioned, I think that there was recently an article about this contagion effect. And another thing that recently came out was that with autism, there's a very high prevalence for females that are autistic. And they're starting to look at that too. But you have to keep in mind that you also have this becoming much more celebrated in the schools. So it's not something that I can even imagine a child on their own thinking of. If they did not have someone saying that this is possible, I can't imagine the vast majority of children even thinking of it.
Margot Cleveland is an attorney and graduate of Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge, adjunct professor for the College of Business at Notre Dame. She's senior contributor for The Federalist and author of a recent column titled LGBT Activists Teaching Judges to Yank Kids from Parents Who Won't Transgender Them. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Margot, thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Todd.
When we come back, there has been a long fight in the United Methodist Church, the second largest Protestant denomination in the United States, to approve homosexuality. Currently, some academic leaders of almost 100 institutions are calling for them to do it again. We'll find out why and what's going to happen after this.
My kind of town, Chicago.
The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is coming to Chicago for its one and only 2019 conference. You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Join the tradition of Lutheran teacher education at Concordia University Chicago. Choose from early childhood, elementary, secondary, or special education tracks and learn to bring God's love into your classroom. Our programs are nationally accredited, so you'll be equipped to serve at one of 2,500 Lutheran schools across the United States. Visit cuchicago.edu to learn more and apply today.